How important is Annie? Why was Kate's name scratched off? And Lost the Musical? We'll have ponderances on those questions and more in today's official Lost audio podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the podcast. We're here today with executive producers Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse to rehash our last two episodes, Sundown and Dr. Linus, and prehash our upcoming episode entitled Recon. That airs Tuesday, March 16th from 9 to 10 p.m., only on ABC, of course. They'll also, as always, take some of your fan questions. And don't forget, you can submit your future questions, past questions, sideways questions, whatever they are, to lostfanquestions@abc.com, all one word. Don't forget to check out the legalese at the end of the podcast, of course. Here now, though, are Damon and Carlton.
Good morning, Damon.
Hello, Carlton.
And gosh, it's a good day because Chris White is back from paternity leave.
Paternity leave. We did an episode called Maternity Leave, but yes. Chris is back from paternity leave.
I misstated, actually, on my Twitter feed that he was on maternity leave, and many people corrected me. And we're wondering whether you were on maternity leave, whether there was something strange that had happened.
I've actually got a question later for you, Carlton, about lactation. So
I think we're gonna talk about a teaser.
I'm not joking. Wow. Stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Stay tuned. That's like, you know, the weather guy that comes on and says, Stormwatch coming up.
Chris, a little behind the scenes podcastery, Chris gives Carlton and I basically a packet of questions that we go through right before the podcast. Carlton will take the odd pages and I'll take the even pages, and we can hear each other sort of snickering. I think it's safe to say that this question that I'm referring to is the most bizarre question I've ever read in the history of the podcast.
Well, I guess they're going to stick around for the rest of this podcast just to find out why there could possibly be a question about lactation.
Unfortunately, we haven't gotten to do a lot of podcasting. We'll be able to do a little bit more, but a couple of episodes have aired since we last spoke.
We have been very busy actually working on the finale, which is, you know, takes a long time. I mean, basically getting the story worked out, getting all the story beats in the right place, actually executing scenes. We're still actually writing the finale now, so we
feel in many ways we'll always be writing the finale. It's only the last episode of the show ever, so
yeah, not like there's any pressure on that.
But we do have time for you guys, and the two episodes that have been on the air since we last chatted are Sundown and Dr. Linus. Obviously, one was a Saeed episode, the other a Ben episode, but kind of different episodes, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Sundown was kind of a kick-ass episode, a lot of, you know, rampaging smoke monster. What are we to make of Saeed's condition coming out of Sundown, Damon?
What I love about Sundown, and that script was written by Paul Spashevsky and Graham Rowland and directed by Bobby Roth, is there's this kind of very cool thing in play, which is if you tell somebody that they're evil, is that an excuse for them to act evil? Ben Linus last year says, hey, you're a killer no matter what you do. And now Dogan, who basically tried to kill this guy based on whatever they hooked him up to, he says, you're a bad dude too. And if you're not a bad dude, then prove it. But it seems like when he gives Saeed that knife to kill Locke, he's actually setting Saeed up to have Locke do his dirty work for him. So there's an argument to be made for the fact that Dogan sort of got what was coming to him.
Yeah, but, you know, I like Dogan, though. I was sorry to see that Dogan got killed. I felt bad for Dogan.
Hey, I'm not saying that Dogan had it coming. All I'm saying is it's not up to us, Carlton, to decide whether or not Saeed is good or evil.
Actually, it is.
Oh. Well, there you go. Moving on.
So, Dr. Linus.
Yeah, this one sort of definitely one of our favorite episodes of the season, if not the series. And this was written by Eddie and Adam and directed by Mary Van Peebles. And I really love Dr. Linus because I feel for the first time, clearly the big controversy this season that feels, maybe controversy isn't the right word, but the thing that people are talking about is the sideways. And we kind of knew that this was going to happen, didn't we, Carlton?
We certainly did. Yes. I mean, obviously the big question that's hanging over the season is how are these two timelines going to reconcile and what are we to make of what's going on in the sideways? There's more information about those things coming as the season progresses. I mean,
but in Dr. Linus, obviously, it's just a good yarn, and the Sideways story is less about what is going on here and more about good old-fashioned season one redemption.
Yeah, I mean, we basically, I think the key to the Sideways here is the way in which it sort of connects to the island story, and you know, for us, it was really an exciting thing to write a episode which was really about Ben's redemption and about, you know, the degree to which this guy, who has obviously done a lot of bad things, is it possible for Ben to be redeemed? Is it possible for him to become a different person? And his level of remorse and Emerson's acting in this episode was just unbelievable. And, you know, I think that final scene with Alana where she finally forgives him is really one of the more powerful scenes that we've ever done in the show.
The fact that Ben Linus, who is definitely sort of one of the big bads of the series, suddenly the audience is like, I don't really want this guy to die, even after all of the horrible things that he's done, is pretty cool. And that's, you know, we can't say enough great things about Michael, but obviously also a great script by Eddie and Adam. And, you know, all the little touches in it, you know, the Miles digging up, you know, a little shout out back to Exposé with the diamonds. And then, of course, the ending of the episode where we see that who has returned to the island, Carlton.
Yes, indeed.
Do you think that Charles Widmore is perhaps the person that Jacob was referring to back in Lighthouse when he said someone's coming to the island?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a good chance he could be referring to Charles Widmore. I think that would be my educated guess.
So, but if Jacob was referring to Charles Widmore as the person who's coming to the island, does that mean that Widmore is now on our side? He's an agent of Jacob? This horrible, horrible man, Charles Widmore, who is responsible for bringing this freighter of doom and Kimi and all
the freighter of doom.
Has he been flipped in some way? Wow. What? Where are his allegiances?
That's very interesting. I'm actually curious to find that out, Damon. I just can't say.
We're probably never going to see Charles Widmore on the show again, are we? This is one of those dangling threads that you're not going to resolve.
No, I think it would be really irresponsible if we didn't see Charles Widmore on
the
show.
Can you guarantee me right here in this podcast that we will see Charles Widmore in next week's episode, Recon?
Yes!
What?
I will.
Good gravy.
I think that actually serves as a pretty good prehash for Recon, don't you think?
And who is the focal point of Recon, Carlton?
It would be James Ford, a.k.a. Sawyer.
I feel like we have not gotten our Sawyer fix this season.
No, as a matter of fact, I think some people have actually been upset that, like, several weeks have gone by and there hasn't really been, you know, much for Sawyer in these stories.
Yeah,
so.
Well, when last we saw him, he was with Locke, but then Locke shows up at Claire's hovel and she's like, that's my friend. So where is Sawyer exactly? Is he hanging out with Jin?
We're going to find out this week. And I think, you know, the title Recon is pretty intriguing to me. What do you think? What does Recon mean?
Technically, it means that reconnaissance, which is basically sort of sending someone behind enemy lines to figure out what's going on. But it could mean to con again.
A double meaning title.
Recon. Oh. And he is a con man.
That's true. So maybe it means both things.
Wow.
That would be exciting.
That would be clever.
All right, well, that's good.
Pull that off somehow. So, it's time for questions.
Questions, Chris. This is from Tony Almanza. Dear Damon and Carlton, I think I have solved the mystery of Lost.
Oh, boy.
An anagram for Benjamin Linus is Blame Ginny Sun. So could it be possible that both Sun and Jin will be the cause for everyone's demise?
This is amazing because people ask us all the time, is there an Easter egg that we have not discovered yet? And we've always said no because we want them to stop looking. But clearly now you have discovered the secret of the show. Yes, Jin and Sun. Big trouble all the way.
Wow, okay.
That's a great question. Now, Carlton, this...
We're building the lactation question, right? You're not dropping that right out of the box on me, are you?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm not. This question is definitely a serious question, and it's from Michael Cunningham. Dear D&C, how about cats? I know you guys are not fans of most animals, whether it is keeping them caged for your nefarious experiments or simply wiping out exotic birds from the face of the show, but what about cats? Do you have anything against cats? It's been a few years now since you promised that we'd see what happened to Saeed's cat, Nadia. In a podcast, you promised we'd see what happened there. Don't forget, lies make baby Jesus cry. Love the show. Michael in Dublin, Ireland.
Wow. God, yeah. I forgot that we'd made that promise. My guess is it was a rather facetious promise that we were going to be seeing what happened to Nadia's cat.
So you don't have anything against cats?
No, I don't have anything against... In fact, I had a cat when I was growing up named DC, like that darn cat, like the Disney movie, which is kind of ironic since we're now sitting here on the Disney lot. Maybe there is some karmic significance to that. But I loved my cat, and I always... I'm a cat fan.
And Carlton,
let's just say I embrace cats.
Where is DC today?
Well, since I had DC when I was a child, DC is
what?
Deceased.
Coincidence? All right, Carlton, clearly not a cat fan. Moving on.
Okay, this is from Ari Margolis, or Margolis.
Great.
Hey now, my name is Ari Margolis. I attended the Paley Lost panel last week, and I asked the question about Desmond on the plane and was wearing the green lock shirt from the gallery event that Damon commented on.
Yes.
The panel was great and was awesome to get to ask you guys a question. There was just one problem. I'm not good in front of crowds and blanked on the question I really wanted to ask. In the episode Lockdown, who was responsible or behind the dropping of the pallet of Dharma food that lands on the island?
The answer to the question is, we have every intention of answering where the pallet came from. However, it might not happen in the actual show itself.
That's right.
That's all we're willing to say at this point. I think that's intriguing.
That's very intriguing.
Enough.
It is, yes. So, okay. But it's not going to happen right now on this podcast.
Yeah. Carlton, serious question now from Christopher Selby. This is one of those things that's now, as we start answering things like what is the monster, can we know more about the numbers, the other questions start to percolate to the top, and this is one that I think you might be familiar with.
Okay.
During season 3, we learned about Annie
and
a volcano on the island. On the DVD commentary track for The Man Behind the Curtain, you guys pointed out that the volcano on the island that Olivia refers to in the Dharma classroom will be less important than Annie, but still seismic. Is this still the case, or were you just yanking our collective chains? Are we going to learn something about Annie, the young girl who is apparently the most important person in Ben Linus's history? And what about that stinking volcano? Your pal, Chris Selby from Charlotte, North Carolina.
All right, Chris. Well, let me break it down for you here a little bit, okay? So,
do you want me to do a beatbox?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. No. I cannot do a
beatbox.
Okay,
you don't need to do a beatbox. Yes, in terms of the volcano seismic activity, yeah, you're gonna get more about that before Lost is all said and done. In terms of Annie, we're getting variations of these questions, and just to kind of be clear, Annie was in one episode of the show, and in that episode she was an important person early in Ben's life, but in terms of having a vast mythological significance in the series, she doesn't. I mean, we are, in our opinion, tackling important questions that are central to the show, but there are things like that which we don't really consider to be a part of the ongoing narrative.
And, you know, just to go one step further, I think certain story points in the show are actually, they're not story points, they're character dynamics. And one of the questions that we sometimes get asked is, do we have any intention of showing the show in chronological order, like one scene after another? And the reason that we say we wouldn't want to do that is that the stories are built for very specific reasons the way that they are. So if you think about the episode where we introduce Annie, that's an episode where Benjamin Linus and his affection for Juliet is sort of front and center. And we were trying to explain, this is why, you know, basically Juliet has become the proxy for this sort of childhood, this sweet, innocent love that he had. She's clearly not there in 1977 or mentioned. So, you know, a couple of years later, maybe her family left the island or whatever. But it wasn't that relevant to us. But for some reason, it was relevant in terms of Ben's affection for Juliet.
It was a way to illustrate that Ben was a person who had limited romantic experiences in his life, but had a strong and kind of compelling, you know, yearning to have a romantic experience. And he was trying to have that with Juliet, and Juliet was not open to it.
Right. So there you go. That is a closed door for you podcast listeners.
This is from Rachel Lehman. And Rachel says, "Dear Carmen, Carlton plus Damon equals Carmen. So,
about that one.
Hey, I just finished watching the Lighthouse episode. I noticed on the mirror Kate Austin was number 51 in the caves where the man in black took Sawyer. Kate's name was crossed out. But in the Lighthouse, her name was still there. This got me wondering, does the cave belong to the man in black and the Lighthouse belong to Jacob? Are both looking for separate replacements to fill in for them? On a side note, I noticed Wallace was crossed out at number 108 in the Lighthouse. Because the number is so important, I felt like Wallace is important. Is he the little boy that Locke and Sawyer saw in the forest, or is it a code name for someone we already know? Sorry for the bombardment of questions, but it's just so tempting. Love always, Rachel from Austin." Now, I think this is a good question because we have many questions on this issue about the numbers, about Kate's, you know, significance in the lighthouse. And
which is
the
surprising
cave.
Because we thought nobody would have any questions about the numbers. I mean, we...
Exactly.
First off, the illumination that I can provide is that the show speaks for itself. So, you know, for anything that we're about to say is purely theoretical. When Locke brings Sawyer, or fake Locke, or the man in black, whatever you want to call him, we call him Locke. When Locke brings Sawyer down into that cave, is he telling the truth? He basically says, this is Jacob's cave. Here's my interpretation. When he walks in and he sees that rock on that scale, and he says it's an inside joke, and he throws it, it doesn't seem to be pretending to me. So that would seem to be strong evidence that, in fact, Jacob wrote all these names here. However, there's also this lighthouse where the names seem to correspond with angles or degrees on this rotating mirror. So is it possible that we know that in the lighthouse, Jacob seemed to be watching these people, his candidates, but he was also recording their names down in a cave? Why would he do it both places? Is it possible, Carlton, that maybe he wanted his nemesis to find the cave? And that there's a little bit of misdirection going on here. That maybe he crossed off Kate's name in the cave to throw the monster off his scent. Is it possible, Carlton? Just allow the possibility.
I'm going to say that theory could live. I think that is a possibility. Okay. I think this kind of speculation is actually good speculation.
But what is Jacob up to? This is the big question. And the great thing about Jacob is, like any great deity figure, their true plan is purely interpretive and conceptual. But wouldn't it be great if you could sit down with the guy and ask him some questions?
It certainly would.
Well, I really hope we do that on the show.
And but you know, the whole notion of these candidates is a very intriguing one, and I hope we're going to get more about those.
You know what else is intriguing?
What?
This question.
Are we here now?
This question is from Beatrice O'Coin, or O'Qua, from Calgary, Alberta. Did the Oceanic Six somehow have Dharma brand baby formula on hand? This one's for you, Chris, new father. Did the island give Kate the ability to lactate when she decided to become Aaron's mother? If Kate wasn't breastfeeding Aaron by the time they arrived on Sumba, how did she prevent suspicion from being aroused as to whether or not Aaron was her son? If Aaron wasn't breastfeeding from Kate, this would have added severe doubt to Kate's already rather dubious, given her small size at the time of her arrest, claim of being 6 months pregnant with Aaron at the time of the crash. From when the outside world would believe, Kate wouldn't have had access to formula and breast milk would have been Aaron's only means of thriving. Answer the question, Carlton.
I don't think I can. I feel like what it must be like if you've just been like punched out by Mike Tyson. I'm on the canvas. I must say that is not a question that was ever anticipated in the room. That is not a question I've ever heard before.
Well,
and
this is traditionally how we answer questions like this when somebody points out something like this, which is very relevant. And the way that we answer them is this. There's a smoke monster. There's a smoke monster on the island.
I will also say there's coconut milk.
Yes. Oh, that's a good one.
There you go.
Okay, coconut milk it is. Wow. All righty, moving on.
All right, I just have one more final thing here.
Yeah,
It's small, but it's little. It's from Jarno Lamborn. After the finale, I think you should turn Lost into a Broadway musical. Then you can have the content of the zombie season live on stage, and Michael Cicchino can round out his trophy shelf with a Tony. What do you think? Asks Jarno.
No.
Could you just sing something from the zombie season, Damon?
I'll tell you what. I will write a song for the next podcast and perform it.
Wow.
About the zombie season.
You will.
I will. You have my word.
All right.
I have a point of clarification.
I'll even listen to the next podcast then.
And then a final question, Carlton.
Yes.
The point of clarification, Bob Harris, and I'm going to paraphrase here, basically asks, in short, Alana said something as they were trekking down the beach to Sun about Locke being, or the man in black, or the monster now being stuck in Locke's form.
Yes.
And this has created some a little bit of confusion that maybe we can help clear up on the podcast, because it seems that if he were stuck in this form, that would sort of rule out the possibility that the monster had been appearing as perhaps other dead figures on the island, Yemi, Christian Shepherd, etc.
Yeah.
So is there something that happened in between the end of last season?
Yes.
You know, when Alex appeared to Ben? What happened, Carlton?
Yes. I think that the critical event was Jacob's death. The man in black may have had the ability to take multiple forms, but after Jacob died, I think it's a very likely explanation that he was stuck in the form that he was in when Jacob died, which happened to be John Locke.
Right.
So now he's in John Locke's form. Jacob's dead. He can no longer turn into other people.
So this obviously presents the follow-up question. Why not be in the form of Fabio when you kill Jacob? Because if you're going to – if it's like I can either be Black Smoke or I can be Fabio – that it just was he not a candidate, Carlton?
Well, I think the problem is the difficulty that Fabio would have had convincing Ben to kill Jacob. That's where I think the rubber meets the road, Damon.
Remember when that hurly bird flew into Fabio's face on the roller coaster?
Yes, I know.
Okay, my final question, Carlton. It is a yes or no question. Try not to think about it for too long. Just answer. Tell the truth.
I'm going to say yes even before you even say the question.
Hello, Damon and Carlton. This is from Alan Chavez. In last night's episode, Richard said that he was immortal because Jacob touched him. So my question is, was Jacob also immortal because he touches himself?
Yes!
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week.
Bye!
That's it for this podcast. Recon airs Tuesday, March 16th from 9 till 10 p.m. only on ABC. For fan questions... please note that by submitting your questions, you agree to ABC's terms of use, and you agree to have your name, city, state, and question included in this podcast. All submissions become the property of American Broadcasting Companies Incorporated and may be used, edited, republished, or published in any manner and in any media throughout the world in perpetuity without compensation. You must be 18 years or older to send email to abc.com.